Happy Labor Day, and thank you, Craig. I bring greetings from Wisconsin's labor movement, particularly our Wisconsin State AFL-CIO President Stephanie Bloomingdale, and our union values of equity, justice, and solidarity to your service today as we discuss and reflect upon Labor Day, a day that we celebrate working people, the value of our labor, and we remember the struggle working people have endured to achieve the many benefits that we all enjoy. As a child, I was fed on stories of family and work, particularly the story of my great-grandparents working in the coal mines of Western Pennsylvania. When they started nearly a century ago, children were working alongside their parents, and the conditions were even more unsafe than they are in the mines today. However, my great-grandparents and their coworkers pulled together, despite language barriers and their dire economic conditions, and fought to organize their union. The juxtaposition of their economic conditions pre-union and the resulting economic conditions of my family post-union over the next century, as we all grew into various professions but kept our union card all the while, is due to the struggle, the sacrifice, and the collective action of my great-grandparents and their coworkers. But also, they didn't do it alone. They did it with the support of their family and community, including their faith and spiritual community. You know, Dorothy Day, the Catholic activist who started the Catholic worker movement, explored this juxtaposition of workers who are part of a union and workers who are not. In her book, The Long Loneliness, that was published in 1952, Dorothy Day wrote, quote, "The contrast between the worker who is organized and has a union and also has the fellowship of one's trade to give them strength and those who have no organization and come to us, this contrast," she wrote, "strikes a response in every human heart." This morning, I would like to talk about this contrast and a collective response from our hearts on this Labor Day 2021. Craig shared with us the commitment of your congregation and your association of congregations to acknowledge, address, and pledge to combat the depth of economic inequality in our country. The fact is that on this Labor Day, the income inequality gap is the largest that it has been in the last 50 years due to the decline of unions. The balance of power has shifted completely towards corporations, and the labor laws designed to empower and protect working people have been intentionally weakened over the last 80 years, making it harder for workers to improve our working conditions. The child poverty rate last October was 20%. You heard that correctly. Nearly one in five American children lives in poverty. This is because their parents work in jobs that pay poverty wages, and/or because their parents are working without the sufficient benefits or rights at work. At the same time, the number of the wealthiest of wealthy Americans, those who have more than $1 billion of wealth, leapt from 66 to 614 billionaires over the last 30 years. Worse, in the first 10 months of the pandemic, the wealth of these billionaires increased by $1.1 trillion. This transfer of power and wealth should strike a response in all of us. We can dissect wealth inequality every which way, but we do know that when workers are members of unions, we fare better. On average, a worker covered by a union contract earns 11% more in wages than a peer with similar education, occupation, and experience in a non-unionized workplace in the same industry. There is no better guarantee of equal pay for equal work than a union contract. Black workers represented by a union are paid nearly 14% more than their non-unionized peers who are Black, and Latino workers are paid nearly 20% more than their non-unionized peers. A union contract is the best way to ensure that working people are treated equally and with respect. We also know that American workers who are not in a union see and know that they would fare better in having a voice in a workplace with their coworkers. A Pew poll study released just this week found that unions have a 68% approval rating with the American public, and with younger or youngerish people in the 18 to 34 category, the approval rate is even higher at 77%. Of non-union workers, 48%, which equates to 59 million people, say that they wish that they had a union in their workplace. However, only about 50,000 workers gain union recognition each year. We have to ask ourselves, why is it that so many Americans approve of unions and so many non-unionized workers say that they would like to join and form a union, but so few do each year? The fact is that our current labor law makes it very difficult for workers to win union representation. Workers face multiple hurdles and obstacles when they try to organize, which sum up to harassment, intimidation, and union busting. Union busting is a $340 million industry. Basically, when managers get wind that workers are even talking about a union, they'll call up a law firm or union busting firm. And their job is to skirt or even intentionally break the law that allows workers to organize. This is the Federal National Labor Relations Act, which has not been updated to enforce workers' rights since it was passed in 1935. Corporations and their union busters break the law because the law lacks any teeth or real enforcement mechanism like fines or criminal penalties. So these union busters will come in and they'll hold mandatory meetings with managers and workers, either in forced group settings or individual one-on-one meetings. And workers who are known to be pro-union can be forced to attend these meetings on the condition that they keep quiet. And they are often told that if they do speak up in one of these forced mandatory meetings or ask a question, they can be fired on the spot. Under the law, as it is now, management can basically say or do anything so long as it's not an explicit quid pro quo threat, like, if you vote for the union, then you'll be fired. But pro-union workers are regularly harassed, intimidated, and yes, even fired for supporting the union. In fact, U.S. employers are charged with violating federal law in 42% of all union election campaigns. You may have heard earlier this year that workers at an Amazon warehouse in Alabama tried to form a union. The workers lost, but because Amazon and their union busting firm violated the law so egregiously, the workers might be entitled to another new election. You may also have heard the news recently that Colectivo Cafe workers here in Madison, Milwaukee, and Chicago tried to form a union and they won over extremely intense obstacles by management. These Colectivo workers stuck together and won, but the vote was actually at first tied because the company fought to keep out certain pro-union ballots from workers who are pro-union. The federal government finally ordered the counting of these ballots, and the workers did win their union. Charges of illegal union busting, which are politely under the law called unfair labor practices, were filed by workers at both Amazon and Colectivo. But not coincidentally, both companies hired the same notorious union busting company to manage their union busting tactics. The harassment, surveillance, discrimination, and fear that is currently allowed to exist is horrendous. And it certainly does not uphold our basic principles of recognizing and affirming the dignity of every person to provide for themselves and their families and to make decisions as to whether they and their coworkers should team up and negotiate together over wages and benefits in a union. Our nation's economic and labor laws are so skewed that harassment and fear run rampant when workers try to form a union. Our current labor laws basically give corporations carte blanche to use scare tactics to bust up workers who attempt to exercise rights at work. Union busting is a direct attack on workers' dignity. It presupposes that corporations know best, but allows, and allows executives to dictate the outcome, silencing any voice that the workers may have. Our current labor laws do little, if anything, to uphold the dignity of workers. The inherent dignity of all people includes the dignity of their personhood and also of their labor, our labor. Upholding the dignity of all is your congregation's first principle. It is the central tenet of the labor movement, and it is literally the first sentence of the UN Human Rights Charter's preamble. To stand for the dignity of people, for our labor, then means to take a stand against today's extreme inequality, as Craig laid out in his introductory remarks. It means to take a stand for workers' dignity on the job and against union busting, to allow us to have a voice at work and work together to advocate for better wages and conditions on the job. To uphold the dignity of all, as Dorothy Day wrote, means to strike a response in the heart of every human. What then is the appropriate response of our human hearts this Labor Day? This Labor Day is a moment when the labor movement is joining with people of faith to advocate for the bipartisan Protecting the Right to Organize Act, or what we call the PRO Act, for fundamental change in how workers can join together to win better working conditions, for a new day of dignity and voice for all of Americans' workers. The purposes of the PRO Act are simple. Number one, to ensure workers can advocate for the changes that we would like to see on the job without fear of retaliation. And two, to strengthen workers' right to form a union and negotiate for those changes if we so choose. Passing the PRO Act is a once-in-a-generation opportunity to empower workers to exercise our freedom to organize and collectively bargain together. The PRO Act would hold management accountable for when they violate workers' rights by attaching penalties and fines to discourage others from breaking the law, and to make sure that discriminated employees can seek justice in a court of law. Right now, so many employers break the law because it's easy and cheap. The PRO Act would fix that. The PRO Act would also ensure that more workers could form a union. Right now, employers try to mislabel workers as independent contractors just so that they can avoid having the workers join together in a union. The PRO Act would make sure that so long as there's a boss controlling the work, then the worker can join a union. The PRO Act would also outlaw those forced anti-union meetings, so workers who don't want to attend don't have to and can't get fired for speaking up if they do. This past March, the United States House of Representatives passed the PRO Act on a bipartisan basis, with Republicans and Democrats voting for it. But for the last 6 months, it has sat in the US Senate without action. It is time to call for that action to pass the PRO Act. You likely know that Wisconsin has two US senators, US Senator Tammy Baldwin and Senator Ron Johnson. Senator Baldwin is a co-sponsor of the PRO Act, which is fantastic news for us. But I regret to inform you that Senator Johnson is not a co-sponsor, and he's also failed to meet with workers to discuss the PRO Act. So on this Labor Day, please think about a response that you could do, an action that you could take on this Labor Day, and perhaps you'll join me and workers to take action to support the passage of the PRO Act. Here are some items that you could do. Number one is that you could call or write Senator Johnson and ask that he support the PRO Act. You can find his information on his website and also on our website, but I'm actually just going to put his phone number in the chat right now. And the best thing that you could do is, there it is that you could add his contact information as a contact in your phone. So I'm going to hold mine up. I'm not sure if you can see it, but you can just see that I can tap his number right there, call his office, and leave a message to support the PRO Act. Another action you could take is to call or write Senator Baldwin and say thank you for supporting the PRO Act. Many of us were raised with, you know, aunts and uncles who maybe gave us small gifts for our birthday, and we always had to write them a thank you note. The same is true for our legislators that support us. And you can also, I'm going to put Senator Baldwin's number in the chat, and you can call her and leave her a message on this Labor Day and say thank you for supporting and co-sponsoring the PRO Act. Another small action that you could take is to support workers who are in a union or who have newly formed their union. And if you live close by to the Colectivo in Madison, you could drop by and just tell the workers congratulations on forming their union with the IBEW. And you could thank union workers every day for standing up and working together on the job. You can also follow the Wisconsin State AFL-CIO on social media or our blog or sign up for emails. And that's the best way to follow actions that you can take to support workers as well. So I just want to conclude by saying that the voices of people of faith, as they have always been, are critical in the struggle for social and economic justice, to address income inequality and improve the lives of tens of millions of workers for generations to come. This Labor Day, let's celebrate the contributions of working people, but also let's strike a response in our own hearts as we connect our personal and collective struggle for dignity, democracy, and a collective voice on the job to the fundamental values of our faith traditions by taking action to address inequality and empower workers. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Teresa, for that very, very informative and energizing and inspiring reflection. We are really, really grateful to have heard your talk today.